Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd. And if you're in Chicago, you gotta check out the Second City Training Center's weekly musical improv show, Infinite Sundays, happening every Sunday night at 8 p.m. in the Blackout Cabaret. A brand new show is performed each week, which will result in a brand new musical. And how do you get tickets for this wonderful show? All you need to do is go to secondcity.com. Don't forget, Training Center students get in for free, and if you use the code NERD, you can save $2 off. Have you ever thought about laundry and dry cleaning at the tap of a button? Yes, there is an app for that with Drive. It gets your dry cleaning and laundry picked up, cleaned, and delivered by Chicago's top cleaners all through the Drive app. It's available mornings, evenings, and weekends. Book your first pickup now. All you need to do is search Drive, spelled D-R-Y-V, in the app stores, or go to drive.com. Now here's the best part. They're going to give you $20 off your first order when you use the promo code ImprovNerd. So what are you waiting for? There is nothing better than clean clothes, especially if they're picked up and delivered for you. So just go to drive.com, spelled D-R-Y-V, and use the promo code ImprovNerd and get $20 off your first order. Don't forget, if you love what we're doing here on Improv Nerd, do me a favor. Go to iTunes and write a positive review. It would really help with my low self-esteem. Guess what I got for you today? I have got a musical improv episode for you of Improv Nerd. She is the founder of the second annual Chicago Musical Improv Festival. She's not only an amazing improviser, she's an amazing teacher. Of course, I'm talking about the lovely and talented Stacey Smith. We recorded this live episode at the Chicago Musical Improv Festival at the IO Chicago. Before we get to this episode with Stacey, where I actually bullshit my way through some more musical improv, though I do think I'm getting better at it, I just want to say, before we had Betsy, my daughter, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that Lauren and I had a baby girl about 10 weeks ago, and everybody before we had her was saying, oh, she's going to teach you improv. It's going to be great. And first of all, I hate when people say that because I find that so hokey, you know, and almost patronized. I thought these people were full of shit, except things started to change this week. Betsy started to smile. Now, the only way you can get her to smile, and I didn't know this, was Lauren came in when I was changing her. And she said, if you want Betsy to smile, she's going to mirror back what you're doing. So if you look depressed, which I do all the time, she's going to look depressed. But if you start smiling, genuinely smiling, which I'm a fake smiler. I'm not a good smiler. I'm very uncomfortable. She will then smile back. She will mirror back to you. So I have been smiling at her all week long, and she has smiled back. And it's such... First of all, it makes me feel good, and it makes me feel connected, and I feel so much love towards her. But it's such a simple improv thing, isn't it? I mean, it's just like, it's mirroring. I have to mirror my child. So to all those people I thought were full of shit and were hokey and really cheesy when they're like, oh, she's going to teach you so much about improv. Well, she already has, because you know what? I need a lot of practice on joy, and I especially need practice on smiling. Because look at any of my pictures. When you're done listening to this episode, look at some pictures that are on like my Facebook page or on an Improv Nerd page on Facebook. I am the most fakey smiler. You know, I don't know how to smile. I really don't. It's just really uncomfortable. All right. Enough about me. Here it is. You're going to love this. I love learning more about musical improv. I love throwing myself out there, and I love Stacey Smith, and you're going to love her too. Here it is. The Stacey Smith episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh yeah.
We've got to start because my wife, Lauren, is the biggest Stacey Smith fan.
Oh, and I'm a big Lauren fan.
And she's like, you know, Stacey has got everything. She's young. She's good looking. She's talented. Go to Los Angeles. She says, go to Los Angeles now. What do you think of that?
That's interesting. I feel like in the last 2 years, a lot of people have been telling me to do that. And I say, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm so happy where I am.
Has it ever crossed your mind?
To go to L.A.? No,
yes.
Not L.A.
Okay.
Well, there was a little span of time where I was like, I want to be a puppeteer for the Muppets. And everything was out there in L.A. And then I auditioned at Disney, and they're like, we love you, but you're too short. The puppeteers have to be a certain height, because they do it from down low.
With their hands up
yeah.
there?
So I can't be on Sesame Street. Dream's ruined.
Yeah.
And so if I were to go anywhere, it would probably be New York, because that's where I'm from.
Was that tough to be rejected like that because of height? It had nothing to do with talent.
No, I don't know. If someone was just like, hey, you can't stick your hand in a felt object for the rest of your life, I was like, all right, there'll be other things. You know, I'll figure it out.
So you grew up in Long Island.
Yep,
all
Long
right.
Island.
And you played instruments starting at 9 years old.
I did, yeah. I was a musician.
And you bass clarinet.
For
people that don't know bass clarinet, what is the most famous song with the bass clarinet?
Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Which is, how does that go?
Da 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 da.
Right.
Da 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 da.
And you always wanted to be a band director.
Yes, that was my passion when I was younger. I used to take conducting classes when I was like 13. I just like, my mom was like, went up to my band director, Mr. Malinowski. He was fantastic, and she was just like, can Stacy like train with you privately to conduct? And I got to go up and conduct when I was in eighth grade, the seventh grade band. I got to direct an entire number. March for a Rainy Day was the name of the song, and I was just up there kind of winging it.
Were your parents supportive about that, or did you drive them nuts?
Well, I think I just drove them nuts in general.
In what way?
My family is very quiet. I have a very quiet family. So I'm like, my whole life I've just like, I'm an elephant in a china shop. So, like, every day I came home from school, it was like, hello, I'm home! Like, drop my stuff, crash, break something, just start yelling a lot or making up songs. And everyone is just like, oh, that's Stacy. So, I'm just different than everyone. But they were super supportive.
How does being different in a quiet family help you as a performer?
Well, so I think there was points it was actually kind of tough because everyone's like, okay, be quiet. And I was like, no, that's, don't dull my shine. I'm like ready to be loud. And my dad is also, I guess, fairly loud. He's kind of the same as me, that like when you walk down a street, everyone's like, hello there, hat tip. And you're just like, why? But because it's just like that smile that's always on. Like, I don't want to say any bad words. I've got a really bad voice. So I'm trying to just make sure I keep it clean.
A bad voice meaning not your throat.
No, I like to curse.
Really?
Yeah.
You can curse on this podcast.
Oh, then I don't have a resting bitch face.
Okay.
I have a resting smile face.
Okay. And then you were into jazz.
Yeah.
You're one of the few improvisers. They're always comparing improv to jazz and stuff like that. But you were one of the few improvisers who actually
loved
jazz.
Yeah. And so when I would improvise on my instrument, I never knew until I had moved to Chicago that you could also improvise in this way, like that you non-jazz. So I was up there in jazz band, they're like, you got 8 measures to do whatever you want, and just kind of understood the structure of how chords were built and musically the music theory behind it. So it was easy for me to improvise. So then when I got here, I was like, oh, I've kind of been doing this my entire life, but just never knew.
And how did you end up here in Chicago?
So I went to the second college that I went to. I started at one place, ended up somewhere else. But at the so I went to a commuter school on Long Island, St. Joseph's College. And it was a college in the Catholic tradition. So it wasn't a Catholic college. It was just a regular college that had been run by nuns. So, which is very strange because I didn't practice anything really growing up, so it was just all my teachers were like walking around in habits, and it was like, oh, am I gonna offend anyone? But this woman, Sister Grace, who was kind of my mentor, she got me a job doing like lights and sound, and then directing, and then finally performing at this little adorable like little barn theater called the Claros Playhouse. She was like, hey, you should go to Second City. And I Googled it, and like everyone that I had loved kind of went back to Second
City.
Who were
some of those names that you loved?
Well, Amy Poehler is like my queen.
Why? What do you love about Amy
I love Poehler? Her positivity. I feel like I relate to her in that regard of she just, her Smart Girls program is like what I live by. So everything that she kind of promotes and stands for is something that I really admire about her, is that she's always positive and kind of the annoyance method of improvising of you take care of yourself and that means you're taking care of everyone else. So kind of, I like to live by just taking care of everyone. So that's super important to me. So I related to her in that regard. And I just loved her on SNL. I loved SNL like 70s to 90s. And then I was like, okay, I'll take a break. Because I was like, I don't know what I like. So it took me a while to kind of figure out what I liked. But I also was like huge Nichols and May fan. I liked a lot of older stuff that didn't even have to do with Second City. I loved George and Gracie and their radio show, George Burns and Gracie Allen. So I just felt like I liked all these old school comedians that kind of had some connection, whatever degree, to the Second City.
So you're Googling it and you see Second City, and then what happens?
And then I was like, oh, I'm going. And right away, so I had just missed comedy studies because I was a senior.
At Columbia, which is a
right,
program.
Right, which is a new program that now you could get a bachelor's degree in comedy studies. It's like brilliant, it's wonderful. But I went here in January 2009 for a week-long intensive for improv and writing and loved it. And I was like, oh, I found my tribe.
What was it that you found your tribe? What was it about?
Well, it was just everyone, the thing that I found most interesting and that I still find interesting because I teach a lot of beginning level classes is that everyone was
God
doing
bless
it for
you
a different
for doing
reason.
That. God bless you for doing that because that's very hard. People that teach beginning class are saints, improv saints.
Yeah, I found I love it because I like to be that person that kind of plants the seed. I like being that teacher that they're like, oh, wow, I can do this. Like, I like being that first person. It makes me feel special. And plus, I have got a lot of energy. So, like, I have taught later level things and they're like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, this is how I am. Good morning. And they're like,
oh, you're the positivity that turned
yeah.
them off?
Well, I think in later levels, they're just kind of ready to do the work and like a level
give
E
me
class
a hard
is,
note.
Yeah, and the way I teach is kind of, I focus on everyone's strengths rather than weaknesses to work at and be great at what you're good at so that you don't have to worry and be in your head about all the things you're not good at. And my method of teaching is to teach to just above the middle because then the class will grow together. So I don't teach at the best person in the class because then everyone won't rise. And if I taught to the lowest, oh God, it'd be terrifying because in a level A class, it's like you go around the room and I'm like, why do you do this? And someone's like, you know, it's on my bucket list or, you know, I just want to be a more positive person or I'm afraid to speak in public. So it's you, and then this one person that's like, this is my dream, I want to be on SNL. So it's like, you have this vast variety of why they're here. So.
I always question the person that's doing it to be a positive person. How does that work?
It didn't work for you, Jimmy.
No, not at all. I think improv actually made me more curmudgeonly, you know?
Which is so funny because you always say, I'm so negative, I'm so...
It's
and
true.
Every time I've played with you, I've felt nothing but joy. Every time that I've played with Jimmy and Johnny, playing with John Hildreth and you,
I love, yeah.
Every time you're like super silly characters, so I'm like, where is this coming from? Like, I never would ever know that you're a Debbie Downer.
I am Debbie Downer. It's a total act. I mean, I have to work so hard and being positive.
To make sure that...
Yes, it's hard. It's really, really hard.
Oh, well, I think sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I'm having a rough day, but gotta keep trucking, gotta stay positive. So
getting back, because I interrupted you, the whole thing about why you love the improv community when... Coming from a theater community, why you fell in love with the improv community? What was different?
Well, I guess I was so used to so much structure and like people being on time for things. And then I came into this kind of like laissez-faire like thing, and I was like, oh, this is something. I was not spontaneous. I was programmed to be in every single club and do everything at certain times, and that was my whole life.
It
was.
Could we say you were a perfectionist?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, Virgo.
Okay.
Through and through.
All right.
9/11, never forget.
Rule follower, I'm going to do it perfectly.
Yes, absolutely. So then meeting people that were just like, we're going to do it when we want it and how we want it, I was like, oh, this is so different. And I mean, it's the same thing now in a scene. I love to follow that one thing that's so different. And that was kind of the same thing when I had met everyone. I was like, oh, you're so different than what I know. Ooh, I like this. It's different. So I just kind of...
So you love the intensive. You take it at Second City.
Yeah.
You go, hey, I'm going to move to Chicago.
Yep.
You're here for 6 months, and you say it was the hardest, one of the hardest times in your life.
I hated it.
What was so hard about it?
When I first moved here, I was so depressed, and I'm a very emotional person. Like, you could Google me, and there's videos of me crying.
So if I put in Stacey Smith crying, yeah, there's going to be 4 or 5 videos.
I'm Reddit famous for being filmed by my boyfriend when I'm not watching, at vulnerable times, crying about very insignificant things.
Last time you cried about an insignificant thing.
I was watching the Olympics, and Ali Raisman won the silver, and she finally beat Aliyah Mustafina. And when she landed in her floor routine, she knew she won, and it got me. Sporting events, when you like hit a shot at the buzzer, like I always give the example, like Air Bud made me cry harder than any other movie. Because when they shot it, it's ridiculous. But when sporting events, when you shoot at the last minute and you know that that's just a highlight in someone's life and you're living their dream with them for that moment, I'm just like, break down. I'm just like, I'm here too. Like, it's just so. So I'm a very emotional person. So when, and I love my family and I'm so close with my family. I've got 2 brothers and they're fantastic and supportive and we're all very close in age. And my mom is like my everything. So like leaving the nest was very hard for me. And the first 6 months I was trying to figure it out. I had never been on my own. So just trying to figure it out, having kind of a freelance schedule of just like, I was working at a preschool, was a miserable job. Just a bunch of 11, 2-year-olds shitting all over the place. I had pink eye for 6 months straight. I mean, it was terrible. And I was juggling that on like spending everything that I had ever earned on taking like 5 classes at once. Was too proud to ask my parents for help. I wanted to do it on my own. And I hated it. I lived in a studio apartment, had not made friends. The first class I took was in an IFA 2 class, and everyone in IFA 1 had gone through classes together. And so I came in just like guns a-blazing. I'm here, I'm Stacy from Long Island. And everyone's like, we're over it. Like, we've had class together before and no one wanted to do a scene with me. And I was like, oh, I've always fit in before. Like, what's going on, guy? Pick me. Because I was never picked last in gym class because I was badass. I was good at every sport. I'll never forget, like in 4th grade, Darren Anderson, I hope he's listening. He's not, because he doesn't even know I exist anymore, but we were playing kickball and he's like, move up, she's a girl. And I kicked the ball over the fence and got an immediate home run. And I was like, fuck you. And I was 9, but I just was like, knew that I just didn't want to put up with anyone's bullshit. So it was the first time that I was just kind of like, oh, I just need to work harder to find my way. And then once I was taking more classes, I met more people, and then it became
easier. How did you get out? It almost sounds like there was a side of you that was depressed.
I was so depressed. I didn't ever want to leave my studio apartment because I just didn't know where to go or who to talk to, and I was such a homebody. Even when I went to school in Manhattan my first year, I was so depressed that year because I had gained so much weight.
How much weight did you gain? Because I used to be 300 pounds. So I'm always fascinated.
I gained the freshman 65.
Okay.
So,
what was the highest you weighed?
I was like 190.
Okay.
Which for like a 5'3" Muggsy Bogues height character. I love Muggsy Bogues. I was a very wide load.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that was tough for me. So I would go home every single weekend from college. And I was like, oh, is this the college experience? Everyone else is like away and like freedom. But I just like wasn't ready for that yet. And now, 7 years in Chicago, I'm like, oh, this is where I'm meant to be. These are my people and everything. So I kind of just changed.
What was that turning point when you were in Chicago? You're depressed 6 months. That like, okay, I'm going to stay. I'm going to make this work.
I really was starting to connect with a lot of the teachers that I had and like understanding different points of view and making so many different friends in the different programs that maybe didn't necessarily, like it never felt competitive to me. So I was always drawn to the people that just wanted to do this to have fun. And like I started an independent team that like we did 3 shows in basements and they were garbage shows. But like I loved those people. I had such joy interacting with them. And I think I just found a group of people that I really loved. And then I invested all of my time and energy.
How much
into them.
Doing that diversity show changed things for
you? Oh, yeah. So I was a part of a group, which is funny because I think Jonald is in the audience and he was also a part of this group. It was called Urban Indigenous. It doesn't exist anymore. But I was the token white person, which in this community is a very strange thing because diversity, it's almost, if you're a person of color, you're picked up immediately. So like for them to take in this one like loud Caucasian woman was like it was incredible because I learned so many different points of view from so many different cultures. And I was like, oh, I'm not that important and my story is not that important. I need to learn now. What I want to be good at is to be eclectic about everyone else's point of view and take what I like from everything, which I think I did with training centers then.
And how was that a turning point for you, to stay here?
I think it put me in my place, and I think it was the moment that I was like, I have so much to learn. Whereas when I came here, I was like, I know what I'm doing. And it kind of put me in my place, and although it kind of knocked me down, it made me want to fight to get what I wanted.
Just like that kid who said, you...
Yeah, Darren Anderson.
Yes. Now, we've talked about you as being a perfectionist. You've also said you were a type A personality.
Oh, yeah.
And you said things changed for you when you started to embrace failure. How did you do that?
I think mistakes started making me laugh, and I didn't realize they could. And once there was a room full of people that were like, fail, it's great. And I did it, and it felt great. I was like, oh, I love failing. This is great. So like even when I'll get turned down for something, I'm so good at having the mindset of they needed someone else. I've got plenty. And Chicago is such a build your own opportunity kind of city. So that just made me be like, all right, well, I'm going to start my own shit. Screw you.
And then you got into the musical conservatory at Second City.
Yes.
And you're smiling when we talk about this.
I am, because I had such a wonderful experience because I was like, oh, improv and music, put them together. These are my two favorite, my two biggest passions. And when you put them together, what? You could put them together? And just the teachers that I had were just like me. Like they were just, you know, Jeff Boothiette was one of the most fantastic people I've ever met. A great friend, a teacher that became a friend. And that's that whole program. Everyone that I've ever had in that program became a teammate or a friend.
I found that musical improv people are different, a little different than like long form people and stuff like that. Have you experienced?
Absolutely.
Tell me what you've experienced in terms of their difference.
And I think I found that the most producing this festival. Because an improv crowd, sometimes like a stand-up open mic will go and I want to understand the craft, or, you know, I want to look at this in kind of a more intense eye. I'm watching this to know what I like and dislike. And sometimes they're not as, you know, into clapping or cheering. And you get a musical improv crowd. And I saw it Thursday night. I was like in tears when Tara DeFrancisco had ended her set of pulling a complete stranger on stage and doing a 30-minute musical set with her. This girl had never done music before. And the standing ovation that happened and the applaud breaks after every single song. Music is a universal language. So when someone's singing, everyone's like, I can relate, I know music. Whereas some people in an improv crowd are trying to figure it out. You know, they're watching with a more careful eye. And music improvisers are just like, they're like, grew up in musical theater, so they're weird, you know? It's like you're like, you just look around the room and you're smiling and you don't know why you're smiling, but everyone else is, so you feel safe.
All right, we're gonna be back with more Stacy right after this. You wear underwear every day, at least most of us do. Now it's time to try something better. MeUndies has created the world's most comfortable underwear with a blend of fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. When you feel awesome from the inside out, you look awesome from the outside in. It is that simple. And when you upgrade your undies game, everybody wins. Now, for a limited time, MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first order at MeUndies.com/nerd. And here's the best part. If you don't love your first pair, it's free. What did I say? If you don't love your first pair, it's free. You have no excuses to try my favorite underwear brand. So make sure you go to MeUndies.com/nerd to get 20% off your first order and use my link so they know I sent you. Life feels better in MeUndies.
When I asked you about your approach to musical improv, you had a great answer to me. You said, it depends on which show you're in. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so every show I do, I guess improv and musical improv is very different. Musical Armando, a show that I created last year here at the festival, rings really true. I love the heart in improv. I love...
What does that mean?
I love heightened emotions and real people and real stories. And Musical Armando for me brings me so much joy because we're bringing in people that are telling real stories. So all of the improv is in a way immediately based on truth. So we're able to pull from things that people can immediately relate to. Whereas sometimes in just a regular improv show, we get one word and we're inspired by so many things that could be kind of fantastical or magical or
things. And in musical improv, somebody comes up there and says, you know, this is what happened during my day. You know, I went to the, you know, to the...
Yeah, these are just real things stories that happened to me. And so the scenes tend to be more grounded in reality. And so the Deltones is a musical herald, so it's kind of similar in the sense that we have real slice of life scenes, but we obviously like call back a lot more and it's a little more structured. Whereas like my all-female troupe Stacked, we just kind of follow the fun and it's just balls to the wall, whatever we want to do, no apologies, just singing whatever we want, whatever we feel in that given moment. And it's more like kind of just following that nugget and following the fun, and it's less realistic, and it's just kind of, you know, we play animals, we're witches, we're, you know, whatever that is, and it's not grounded in any type of reality ever, so.
And you also said, which I thought was interesting, is it's important to understand the emotions of your character when you're doing musical improv.
Because that's how you earn music. You have to earn the music.
Can you explain that?
So you earn a song when there's nothing left to be said. When you're at such a heightened sense of emotion, that's when a music director, who is absolutely a member of your team, gives you the gift and comes in with music. So they give you an offer. And there's different styles, like there's different music directors that will underscore a lot in a scene, so they'll just play throughout a scene to kind of give a feeling of what that scene is and can kind of help you as a third partner kind of drive what the style of the scene is. But for the most part, whenever that music comes in, that's informing you of what the song is going to be about and what your relationship is with that person.
Great, so we're going to do that right now. We're going to bring in Nate Schaefer, who is the
Nate
musical
Schaefer
director, all the way from Improv Boston.
Boston, yes.
You do not spare any expense here with the musical improv festival. We got Nate Schaefer all the way from Improv Boston.
Yeah, I met him on Thursday. He's so sweet.
Yes. So we are going to do a scene, and then we are going to break into song.
Can't wait.
All right, so give me one technique that I can try to apply in this musical improv we're about to do.
So I think staying emotional and knowing what you want, just like in any improv scene, is going to be huge. But also in musical improv, sometimes something that's lost is when we're in improv scene, we're obviously making eye contact, but music improv is kind of this fantastical thing that we can absolutely feel our feelings so hard that our bodies are driven to kind of sing out instead of at each other. So I don't think you need to try. I think you're going to nail it. Of just let the music kind of embrace you and inform what you want.
Stacey, I need something to beat myself up.
I won't let you.
After.
I won't let
so,
you.
Okay.
That's not going to fly with me, Jimmy. After the show, we're going to walk backstage and you're going to say, you're going to giggle and laugh and you're going to be like,
all right, so
I love
tell
it.
Me this because I yes. was it. How, because I love it. I mean, it's a great visualization. It's a great goal to have. What do I need to do?
To fail. Oh.
Well, that I got down. I figured that out a long time ago. What do I need to go backstage after this and go, my God, that was so much fun. What do I need to bring?
I think you just need to have fun.
I know, people have been saying that my whole life. How do you do it?
I think by connecting with the person that you're singing with, mm-hmm. and taking big risks. So musical.
What does a big risk look like?
Of branching out from what you're used to.
Okay.
So have you improvised a song before?
I have, yes.
And what is the thing that you've dreaded the most?
Probably like being the first one to sing.
Great. Okay. That's what you'll do.
Okay. I'm gonna write. I'm just going to write this down.
If that scares you, that's what you're going to do, and you're going to nail it, and I'm going to have your back every step of the way.
Okay, and the other thing I'm afraid about is, like, it's not going to make sense. It's supposed to say a story, and it's supposed to rhyme.
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
Okay. So it does need to make sense.
Okay.
Because, but it's going to make sense because you're going to be saying how you feel. So you don't need to be clever in musical improv. The more clever you are, the more impressive it is, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, right? And that's great. But rhyming and being clever are just tools that we have that we can bring out that make it more impressive. But if you just sing the way you feel about me, you're gonna nail it.
Great, and I'm committing to not rhyming. And not being clever.
Good.
Okay, great.
But that's a style. So, like, if you ever...
Oh, it is a style?
If you're familiar with Sondheim, Stephen Sondheim, style of Sondheim. Mm-hmm. It's just you're literally singing about the people around you and the environment and what you see and what you feel. And it's just off the cuff. There's no structure to it at all.
I like this guy. I like this guy.
Yeah. I like him,
Has he done pretty well?
You know, Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Okay. So great. So how would you like to start?
I would love to just get a suggestion.
Great. Can we have a suggestion, please?
Quilt show.
I don't know why there was a slight pause there.
No, I loved it.
Okay.
Quilt show.
What was that?
Quilt show.
Quilt show. Okay. When you hear quilt show, how do you process it?
Immediately when I hear quilt show?
Quilt show, yeah.
Well, I think, oh, that's fun.
Okay.
Because every suggestion I have to immediately say, oh, that's fun. And quilt show, do you want to just get up and do a scene or you want to talk through how I'm feeling?
Oh, so you go to feelings.
Because
immediately I'm like, okay, we're going to be at a quilt show. You know, because we're doing musical and musical's got to be a certain way.
I usually immediately choose emotion of how I feel about being at a quilt show.
Okay, great.
Because if you leave a strong emotion, then your song will come quicker, and I'm just ready to sing.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to find an emotion about quilt show,
because
I want to work the same
way. A positive emotion.
Oh, fuck.
You can do it. I believe in you.
What are my choices? Happy? Happy? I got one. All right, great.
Okay.
I had to write it down.
Improv.
All right, here we go. Okay, great. Oh my gosh!
Do you like it?
I love it!
I've sewn all of your old camp t-shirts into a
dress. Oh my god! Oh, that's why you came over.
Yeah.
That, you look so beautiful.
Really?
Yes.
It was my first time sewing.
I you can't even tell.
Really? I've got all of, I put your favorite ones.
Oh my
back
god,
here.
Camp Mohawk. Mohawk?
Mohawk.
Mohawk, yeah.
Or Mohawk, I guess it depends on what.
Oh my god, you did this for me.
Yeah.
I thought you were mad at me.
I was. I was mad that you didn't notice that I was stealing all your t-shirts. I was coming in every day. I wanted you to notice me a little bit more.
I didn't want to say anything because I've never dated, been in a long-term relationship with a thief.
It gets easier. Dating a thief gets easier. You'll just expect me to be around in places that you wouldn't expect me.
See, I'm so confused about this relationship. I mean, I love you. Carol, I love you so much. But I'm just afraid.
You don't have to be afraid. Just know that you won't know.
But what if, like, you stole my car already? You forged all...
I borrowed it.
You cleaned out my bank accounts.
Someone had to. You weren't using all of that sweet cash.
Oh my god.
It's not because I didn't want to offend you. I just wanted to take the things you had and put them to good use.
Oh my god, thank you. No one's ever loved me this way before. You did this so I... Oh my god!
I'm stealing your heart.
Yes, you are. You're doing it every day. You're stealing my heart. You're doing it every day. You're stealing my heart. When I get up in the morning and I can't find my clothes, I know you did it for a good reason.
Yeah.
Cause you're stealing my heart. When I went to the store and I gave them a credit card, they declined it.
Yeah.
They said we had to put a freeze on it because we thought there was identity theft.
And here's something that you should know. You're in love with a klepto.
I'm stealing your heart. You can keep it, I don't want it back.
I'm stealing your heart.
I don't care what you do with it.
This relationship, it's very neat. I am stealing your heartbeat. You and I are finally one. I'm stealing your heart.
Please steal my heart. Please steal my heart. Please steal my heart.
Where did it go? I'm stealing your heart. I own you. I'm stealing your heart.
Please steal my heart. No one's ever stole my heart before.
I'm stealing your heart.
When I look back 20 years from now, I'll be so glad that I didn't go to jail. That you're the one for me. And I was such a stupid one, cause I didn't see that what you were doing was
stealing your heart. Oh my God.
Now,
you're a songstress.
Thank you. Thank you. If this was a law, if this was a regular, not a musical improv crowd, we would not have gotten that applause.
No,
it would have
no,
been
no,
it would have been cricket.
They wouldn't have been.
They would have been like, "Oh, what did they do? Why'd they go to song in that scene? They're bailing on it."
You're a dreamboat.
Thank you.
You were fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh, I love you.
Thank you. I had a great time. It was a lot easier than I thought. I'm not going to say joy. I'm not going to say happy.
You're a
it
jerk.
Was okay. It was all right.
It was, okay.
It was no Tara DeFrancesca and Rance Rensudo in here, but it was, you know.
You nailed
know,
their names.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You were so great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, did we accomplish what we set out to do?
I think so, absolutely. And you followed the music so brilliantly, which is something that I think is a huge fear for people that do musical improv. And here's the thing. There's so many musical improvisers that are known for doing musical improv that cannot sing, but because they commit so hard to what they're doing, are fantastic at it. And you followed the music so brilliantly.
And when you say I follow the music, what do you specifically?
So you follow Nate, who's brilliant, by the way. He's incredible. But yeah, so when he was changing chords and making different resolves, this is coming from a music theory background, you were following everything that he was offering. So when he was stopping the music, you were stopping the music. I'm trying to put it simpler so that
right.
everyone can understand.
So it's just basically listening to Nate.
Yes, you are a great listener.
When people start out, do they not listen? What are the mistakes people make when they first start?
I think people sometimes when they first start are so frightened that they sing so quickly instead of letting the music kind of affect them a little bit. So normally when a song comes in, there are absolutely times that I'll immediately just sing a note immediately, but there's also a lot of times that I'll give an entire 16 measures for the music director to kind of just tell me the tone of what the song's gonna be and make sure that I'm feeling it 100% and that I know. So you can take your time and sing when you're ready. And
what was the emotion that we built on this scene?
Well, love and mm-hmm. and needing each other. Even though we were coming from two different places, we have the one common thing of just being able to relate to each other by needing each other. Like, you needed me because it was different for you and that was something that was exciting for you. And I just was in love with you and you accepted me for
is that I'm simplifying this.
Yes.
Is that almost like the game in the scene in terms of musical improv, finding what the want is?
Yes, absolutely. Just like in any scene. I almost feel like in musical improv, you want to find it faster.
Why is that?
Because the faster you find the game, the faster you're able to sing, which is the whole reason we're doing it, yeah. right? So I almost feel like a lot, and I don't want to misspeak, but a lot of my favorite musical improvisers are better short-form improvisers than long-form improvisers because they find the game and the emotion and everything so quickly that they're ready to play. And so almost the song is the game. A lot of the times in the scene, the song is the game.
So in our scene, where was the song, the game of this, I'm confused when I say this.
So the game of the song when was... you were referencing all the things that I had stolen, mm-hmm. that's the game. So you didn't need to think of anything clever. You were just like, hey, if you're a person that steals, then you've stolen this, this, and this. And because you sang it, that was the game of the song.
I also like, for me, it forces you to play positive. I mean, it really does in
yeah.
a lot of ways. And I was thinking, you know, like, okay, so I'm going along with your idea of, okay, you did it to be noticed, right? You were stealing to be noticed.
Right.
And then I make the discovery, and it's my character's like, oh, okay, she loves me. That's why she was doing it.
Yeah.
Which is a fun discovery.
Right, because if you're just immediately like, that's weird, then you don't need that person, so why sing with them?
And the other thing that I liked, and it was certainly in this scene, and I first discovered it when I had Rance Rosuto and Tara DeFrancesco of here. I'm just going to plug them.
They're here tonight. They're fantastic.
They are. Like it's product placement. there's an emotional aspect that you can really tap into with musical improv that you can't sometimes with regular improv.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's just because, well, a lot of it is because you want to jump in because the music is your scene partner also. So it's like you have this extra thing that you're able to play with and you want to play with it immediately. So by having an emotion, it's just easier to create whatever your lyrics are because it's second nature. You're just singing how you feel. You don't have to go around in circles to kind of figure out who are we really to each other and what do we mean to each other and where are we. It's just immediately, if you're making choices of just like, hey, I like this about you, I need this, I need you, then it's so much quicker.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like what Sondheim does.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to turn the lights up and we're going to take some questions for Stacey Smith.
Oh, fun. There's no one here. I'm just kidding.
Great.
Hi, guys.
Great. Who's? Oh, right here. Yes.
So as a jazz musician myself when I was younger, I also did improv as a musician first. What do you see as the parallels between jazz music and theater improv? And how do you...
So I think just being a jazz musician and really just being a musician and understanding music theory and like where the notes build on a staff and melodies and being able to sight read, then when a music director offers something, I feel like it was so much easier for me as a musician to immediately know what the music director was doing and be able to follow it. And because I'm an alto, and a lot of the people that I play with are sopranos, this is gonna get very nerdy, I know where I stand immediately in a song. So I already know what my strength is and that I'm the low end, so that I know exactly in music where I'll fit in and where I can resolve to. So like having a strong music background made it easier for me to follow music, which I think just enhanced my game of being a music improviser. Like, great, I was already an improviser, knew how to do a scene, but then that added, like, that gem of, like, really understanding music, I think was something that a lot of music improvisers aren't accustomed to. So having a strong musical training, I think, is super important for musical improvisers, and it's a thing that we don't realize. We're just like, we're just gonna sing when we want, but understanding the music director and knowing that that person is our teammate is something that a lot of troops, I think, don't realize how lucky we have it and how great we have it to have that person give us gifts and be able to play with us.
Great, another question? Yeah, right here.
Yeah, Stacey, congratulations on the Chicago Music.
Thank you, you sweet angel.
I wonder, it's a two-part question.
Great.
What are the things you've learned since founding the festival about musical improv specifically, and what advice you have for smaller communities that are trying to build something up themselves?
Great, so let me repeat this for the podcast. Yeah. The first question was? What have you learned since founding the festival?
About musical improv? Well, the greatest thing about watching submissions that makes me both jealous and so excited is that there are so many different forms. People are playing with form. So the thing that I've learned, and it is a very Chicago thing to create your own opportunities, but people are finding these really niche, interesting, cool forms. And so I've learned that you can really just take anything that you love and make it into a form. And then your form is immediately stronger because you're passionate about it. So when I build the schedule, the number one thing I think of is variety, because I don't want an audience to sit through two of the same things in a row, which sometimes happens when you will see two Harold shows in a row. You'll kind of look for the differences as an audience member. Oh, great, that team did more environment work. This team did more this. But coming to the festival, one thing that I've learned is that people want to see different things. And so when I build a schedule, I look at, oh my goodness, there's improvised dance, there's an improvised opera, there's improvised puppets, there's improvised, and I try to put two groups together that are so completely different so that one, they don't feel like they're doing the same thing, and so that it feels more like they're lifting each other up rather than competing.
And your second question was?
Second question is, what advice, based on the experience you've had, do you have for communities trying to build their own musical improv?
What advice would you give for smaller communities building musical improv community?
That's such a great question, because I find myself constantly teaching in smaller communities that are trying to build music programs. And the number one most important thing is having a musical director that can play at the level that you want to perform at. Because there's a lot of green music directors, and that's great. And we're creating programs now that there's actually intensives for music directors to learn how to improvise, because people that are musicians, that's great if they're fantastic musicians, but if they don't know how to play and understand improv, then that's a completely different kind of music director. So the number one thing is really taking the time and finding that one person that is going to be your extra teammate. That is the most important thing. And then also bringing someone in to really understand music and to learn theatricality and musicality. Because a lot of the times we're starting musical improv teams as two people looking at each other, talking in a scene, and music has happened, I guess now we'll sing. Instead of coming from a learning standpoint of, no, music improv is magic, and we could create magic by being theatrical and taking the things that we know about and studying musical theater. I would sit any troupe down and give them assignments to learn different styles of music and to watch different musicals. So understanding kind of a rock opera and how that's different from doing Carousel or Showboat or doing Hamilton, and the different styles and inspirations of different musicals.
Great.
So understanding
another question right here.
Oh, have you seen it?
Seen Air Bud, the movie, yes.
Have you had a moment like that where you were in Chicago and you're like, this is my moment, this is my Air Bud moment?
Did you have an Air Bud moment here in Chicago?
I feel like I have them all the time. I feel like I watch things and just one thing I will relate to so hard that I'll have a this is where I'm meant to be moment. I feel like I have them all the time. I can't even, meeting certain people, you meet a certain person, you look them in the eye, and you're just like, you're my improv person. Like, so I just feel like being an emotional person, I literally have them all the time. The one that I think I had, I was just broken down. So Hurricane Sandy had really affected my family. My childhood house was kind of demolished in the hurricane. And the people that I had met at Stage 773, Jill Valentine, Brian Posen, I'd been working with for years, they set up a fundraiser for my family. And Cook County performed, and Susan Messing and Rachel Mason. And these were my heroes. This was now years ago. People that I felt like every time I talked to them, I turned into a puddle. And now are people I talk to on a regular basis. That's how the community works, and it's the greatest thing. And they did this show, and I couldn't keep it together. I was like, this community is everything.
And I'm thinking, all I'm thinking is...
No! Oh, God!
You're crying.
I always cry. I love it. I love to cry.
Tell me how to cry, because that is something I
live on a cruise ship. Live on a cruise ship for 4 months. You'll learn to cry very often.
Why? Why a cruise ship? Tell me why.
Because
I know you were on a couple cruise
ships. Yeah, I was on two, and every Sunday I would invite all my favorite people to watch the saddest movies. Because I love crying in front of people. I think it's like the best feeling in the world. I'm not embarrassed. I love it.
I am jealous. I am jealous. I am just jealous.
My voice is going too. No, I love it. I love to feel. I sound like a prepubescent boy right now. I hope there's so many 14-year-old boys going through puberty with me as we speak.
Why is it so important for you to feel?
That's the whole nature of this work. I mean, being able to feel and to just love everyone and need everyone, then there's no need to be negative, and you could build a scene so much faster. So if you're just loving on everyone, you don't have to feel like you need to compete with anyone. Like, when someone gets something, and when I first moved here, I was like, man, why not me? And now I'm like, yes, my friends are the best. They're the best at what we do. I can't wait to support them. I've got my own thing.
Wow. That is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, I just hope that you feel that too.
I don't. Here's how fucked up I am. You're telling me this beautiful story about, you know, like you, Hurricane Sandy, and the community comes together,
yeah,
and they have a fundraiser. And I'm thinking, my next question is, how much money did they raise?
Oh my gosh, like $1,800.
That's how fucked up I am. I am focused on the money. I'm like, how much money? I can't see the beauty of it. I'm focused on the goal of it.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like when I talk to people, a lot of people do this, and I teach in the wellness program in Second City. A lot of people do this.
The what program?
The wellness program.
Okay.
And I think that a lot of people do this as kind of a therapy. And sure, I absolutely do it, and it makes me feel better, so it's therapeutic in that nature. But I also feel like, I don't really have a lot of negative, like, I don't have daddy issues, and I don't have, like, this one thing that, like, made me so sad, and I just have always kind of been a positive person, and I think that's my role here. Like, that's my role in the community, is to be that person, so that when everyone else is sad, I could just be like, hey guys, I'm right here, let's do some weird shit, let's just mess around.
But what happens when you need that person?
Then those people are immediately there for me. Immediately, like no questions asked. Even running this festival, I look at the people that I work with and I go, I am now in performer mode, and I don't have to worry about anything because they know exactly what they're doing. And I sent them an email before the festival started and I said, here's the only rule of the festival. You have to have a smile on the entire time. It doesn't matter if you're falling apart or if you don't know the answer or if you can't actually help someone, say that you can help them even if it's a lie. You'll figure it out later. As long as you have a smile on, you're making everyone feel comfortable that you know what you're doing.
We've got to wrap this up.
I can talk forever and cry forever.
What one piece of advice would you give someone starting out in improv, in comedy today?
Don't let things get to you. I think a lot of times when we first start, we are so jaded by so many people getting things over us, or you didn't make a Herald team, or life goes on. There's plenty of opportunities, and the best work you're gonna do is the work that you have created or that you've set up to do. So like, if you didn't make a Herald team, guess what? You're gonna get cut in 3 months anyways. Or if Sharna just wanders in the theater and she's just like, I don't like that one person. Like, it's inevitable. It's just do the things you love to do and the things that you create, because that's when you're doing best work with the people that you love the most.
I didn't give you the option to sing your answer. Are you okay with?
To sing my answer?
Yeah, I mean, you're fine with...
Live your best life. Be true to yourself. Love the ones around you. And be positive, not like Jimmy Corrine.
Stacey Smith. Thank you, Stacey Smith, for being on this episode of Improv Nerd.
It was my pleasure.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. I'm depressed.
And there you have it, is another episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank my guest, Stacey Smith, for inviting us to be part of, this is 2 years in a row, the second annual Chicago Musical Improv Festival at IO Chicago. Of course, I want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you would not be hearing my voice right now. Also, I want to thank Sam Bowers, who is the director of the live version of Improv Nerd. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corrine, and my award-winning improv classes, workshops, and intensives, The Art of Slow Comedy, go to my website, jimmycorrine.com. Also, sign up for the Improv Nerd blog. As you know, we are big fans of social media. I'm on Facebook way too much. I'm on Twitter way too much. But you can go and see our Facebook page, Improv Nerd, and like us. Also follow us on Twitter, which is improv_nerd. And this is something that we're just getting a lot more subscribers to, and I'm really excited about. And I really encourage you to do it because you can see clips from our live show, and that is our YouTube channel, which is Improv Nerd Podcast, all one word, Improv Nerd Podcast, all one word. I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.